Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for being here. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Lauren Mattis, and I'm the president of the Republican Women Freedom Alliance, a group that's sponsoring these meetings. Just a little bit about our group is we are a Republican women's group that are chartered with the National Federation of Republican Women out of Washington, D.C. And there's clubs like ours all over the United States, and our clubs are more of a supportive organization for the GOP platform throughout the United States. So that's what we do. Our goals are to educate, engage, and get people involved in local politics, especially the women, but obviously we welcome men in our group as well. So let's start by saying the pledge, and then we'll get the meeting started. And this is my illustrious flag we have. Yeah. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. I've just got a couple of housekeeping things to do for our meetings, because this is actually one of our monthly meetings, but since the legislative session has been, the legislature has been in session this year, our January, February, and our March meetings have been all about what's going on in Cheyenne, the bills that are going through. The Legislative Action Committee ladies are here to give us reports. Our representative is here, Barry Crago, tonight. He'll be telling us, everyone's going to be kind of wrapping up what happened in the session and what happened with the bills that they were following, and I'm sure Barry will tell us some of the stuff that he was following and sponsored as well. We are a membership organization, so if you're interested in becoming a member, we would welcome you with open arms, men as well. And we've got a lot of stuff planned for the summer as far as fundraising and membership drives, and one of our focuses this year up until the 24 elections, if we can get everything settled, because the state of Wyoming is very difficult to do voter registration drives. So one of the reasons we want to focus on that is because during this past political year, we were very active in the political season. We hosted a meet and greet and one of the first debates for all the candidates. So that was our push out of the gate. We've only been incorporated for about a year. But of the eligible voters in Wyoming, only about 40% of our eligible voters are registered. And that to me is astounding, since we're such a Republican state and people seem to be so concerned and seem to be so involved. But I think that there's a lot of just apathy out there, not intentional. But people think, well, we're a Republican state, we're red, it's no problem, we're going to stay that way, and we won't if people don't get out and vote and get registered. So that's going to be one of our focuses. We also are working on a scholarship fund for some young lady. It's going to be a vocational educational fund, so we're working on that as well. So I don't want to take up too much time. So I'm going to ask, let's see, we've got Jan Loftus and Hope Donahue here tonight from the Legislative Action, and they'll be taking a little bit of time to tell us what they were working on, what they've been working on. And these ladies, along with the group in Sheridan, they are members of the Sheridan group as well as our group here, work through the entire session, put a lot of hours in doing research and following the bills, and it's pretty remarkable the information they come out with it while they're doing all this work. So without further ado, ladies, the floor is yours.
Well, Legislative Action Committee was started in Sheridan County. We're made up of 16 Sheridan and Johnson County women, Republican women, who look over the bills, choose which ones will follow according to 8 focus topics, which are life, fiscal responsibility, Second Amendment, election integrity, school choice, no legalization of marijuana, preservation of freedom, protect natural resources. This year we expanded and we have a point person in each county so that our work is growing across the state. Republican women of Sheridan County met Monday, and we had inquired if we could tally the votes according to the bills that we followed and send it out to the email list, and they said yes, unanimously. So we'll be working on that, and if you're on the email list, you'll be getting the results of that, so you don't have to look it up yourself. We followed 97 bills this time.
Just a quick question on that. Will that be votes all the way through, or will it be votes just at the final?
We're going to do committee vote and third reading vote. If it, the bill died before third reading and there's a roll call vote, we'll only do roll call votes. So we took up following 97 bills. We opposed 53 of them and we supported 44. Of the 53, 38 failed, so that was a success. But 15 of the bills we opposed passed. And we supported 44, 9 passed only of the 44. But I've always heard from political experts that it's more important to kill bad bills than it is to pass the good ones, as much as we want the good ones. There were two outstanding life bills that passed and are sitting on the governor's desk, last I knew. He has until the 18th of March to sign or veto. If he does neither by that date, they become law. If you're interested in him not vetoing those, you should call his office and email, which you can find on his website, the phone number, and you can email directly from the website, and ask that SF-109 and HB-152 be signed into law, and they're on your little sheet there. Another important win was the failure of a bill we were opposing, grants for expanding school mental health. We oppose this bill because schools should focus on academics. They should reach out to parents when there's a mental health concern. And mental health appointments need to be outside of the school setting. We don't want people in the school doing those appointments. The lobbyists from the School Board Association touted that a school with these grants might be able to hire their own mental health professional. As you may have heard, nationally there's a push for community schools, making the school more central in the child's life and taking away from the home life. That bill failed in the Senate committee, so that was a win. Few examples of our losses. I'm going to try to go fast because I'm going to let Mr. Crago speak. My second half is things I know you'll be interested in, the fiscal and the property tax bills. But a few examples of our losses was a school choice bill, which would have offered an alternative school choice for private school for $6,000 per student, offering these families liberty, and for the taxpayer who's paying the absurd or unreasonable amount for public school, $20,000 a student, $6,000 is a good deal for the taxpayer compared to the $20,000. This bill was defeated by the House Education Committee. If you recall or have heard, the Speaker of the House assigns the committees and who's on the different committees, and this committee has only one conservative legislator. Legislature did not protect children in Wyoming from pharmaceutical drugs and surgical procedures, likely taking away their chance for having their own children, for sexual satisfaction, and potential other long-term negative effects such as potentially osteoporosis. This insanity is happening in Wyoming, as puberty blockers are already being used in Wyoming, according to the testimony of Wyoming Medical Society, which opposed the bill. Wyoming Medical Society opposed the bill, deeming children able to make these important decisions affecting the rest of their lives. Should you be allowed to get long-approved medications if the Medical Society and the government agencies would rather use experimental, high-cost medicines? No. Wyoming legislature killed this bill. You ought to watch the testimony of Willard Woods, M.D. He's practiced medicine in Wyoming since 1979. He testified he was fired for prescribing these off-label medications, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. He did a lot of research. He didn't just start using them. He did a lot of research, had used these medications in his practice through decades. and felt sure after his research that they would save the lives of people with COVID. Research was showing 50 to 85% less chance of death and without risk. And it was up to the patient, of course. The death rate in the United States was 1%. He treated 750 COVID patients. He lost zero, saving seven or eight lives. He's a hero, and Wyoming medicine threw him out. Senate Health and Labor Committee majority killed the bill, taking away this protection for the future, for us. The obscenity bills, there were four bills brought to address pornography in some school libraries and some public libraries. All four of those bills were killed. You can no longer trust that you can let your child wander through, and once they're able to look at books safely without tearing them, that they can just go in. You have to do it now. Well, the bill for Medicaid expansion failed for the 10th or 12th time, thankfully. Unfortunately, additional Medicaid spending was approved for postpartum women who are already eligible for 2 months and now will be eligible for 12. This incremental step of more socialized medicine will cause a need for more tax. Medicaid is a financially troubled program. It was initiated in the war on poverty for the most vulnerable, the aged, children, and people with disabilities. There is no federal money for this. For regular Medicaid, Wyoming pays half, the feds pay half. But, you know, it's coming from us. Then I'll save more of the fiscal things for the latter half. Thank you.
I do the bills with banking, money, agriculture, water rights. It seems like I'm missing another topic, too.
Nuclear,
there we go. First bill, open banking. This is one that we opposed. It was HB 62. And open banking means providing access directly or indirectly to customer data from the customer's bank to a third-party financial service provider with the express written consent of the customer and through the use of application programming interfaces. The banking commissioner should adapt all rules necessary to implement this act on or before July 1st, 2024. We were definitely against that. We think you get exposed by a third person, and Mr. Crago voted nay on that. Then it was, and it passed, unfortunately, the House 46 by 15. Then it went to the Senate, where our Senator Kinski also voted no, and it still passed 16 to 15. The next bill was SF, or Senate File 101, and it's Wyoming Legal Tender Act. 4 years ago, a sound money bill, and that's what we've been calling this one, were brought, and this year one was brought to require the state to hold at least some physical gold, which has increased 50% in value since 2019, and is a secure method of diversification. The House Speaker called it an apocalypse thinking. He sent it to the House Revenue Committee, who then ruined the bill by an amendment. Jennings tried to restore it on the floor, but that amendment failed, and the bill, the House reading on the third reading, it failed 6-55. Then, and we supported that bill. We think that in this day and age, we definitely need some solid backing. Then there was Senate File 127, Wyoming Stable Token Act. And the timing was incredible, especially with crypto going haywire. The Wyoming Stable Token appears to lack accountability. U.S. banks are refusing to back crypto. Foreign banks have been willing to back crypto with little transparency, and we see how that went. Why are we putting $500,000 behind this Wyoming Stable Token Act? And it's in the act, it says it's to back the stable token with U.S. dollars, which seems like kind of a step that we don't need to do. The it passed the Senate on the third reading, 20-11. It passed the House Corporations Committee, 6-3. Then it passed the Appropriations Committee, 7-0. And again, Mr. Crago voted no on that, but it still passed the House, 36-25. Any questions?
Hey, Laura, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Just to vote. On the Legal Tender Act, because that's it failed, and I voted against it.
Right.
Because of the way it came, the way it got to the floor, and I didn't.
They did an amendment.
I agree. Yeah. And so my question is, and I'd just like to know kind of what everybody's feelings are about it, because is one of the things I was going to ask a question about, and since you brought it up, that'd be the perfect time. The way the bill was written, essentially, it requires the treasurer to hold gold. And the problem is, in my mind, where do we do that? Like, that costs money. I mean, the treasurer can already, because of the bill you talked about, the old bill from several years ago, we can't invest in gold. I mean, there's nothing preventing the treasurer from investing in gold. I'm all for that. I agree with that philosophy. My question is, do we want to spend money to hold physical gold? And that's my question. Because whether we hold it, let's say why would we build the depository, right? Or we pay somebody to do it, that costs us money. So my question is, for all of you, what are your thoughts on that? How do we deal with the cost of actually holding gold? Because we can't just stick it in the treasurer's office on the main floor of the Capitol.
That's a national guard around.
Yeah. But in all seriousness, I mean, I think it's a question I think we got to talk about, because I'm not opposed to inflation-proofing our money. I'm not against investing in gold. I just don't know how we do it. In the bill, that's what the bill said. We don't care, literally what the statement on the floor was, but we just need to hold 1 ounce. Well, 1 ounce isn't going to do us any good. If we're going to do it, it needs to be a significant portion of our money. And so,
wasn't there a proposal? There's an empty building or going to be empty in Casper that would be a secure place to hold that?
So there's a business coming to Casper, and they're going to actually store physical gold, not just for the state, but for people. Anybody can ask them. But it costs money, right? That's the question. We have to pay them to hold our money. And so I'm thinking in my mind right now, Wyoming, about 20% of our government is funded by investment income. And so right now, we make money off of our investments. If we put it in gold, that goes away. I mean, we're not going to, long term, will we make money on the gold? Yes, but as far as annually being able to keep taxes low because we're using our investment money to pay bills, those two have to weigh against each other. And so that's, in my mind, that's one of the concerns I have with actually holding a significant portion. Because if we're going to do it, we have to hold a significant portion. Now, it doesn't make any sense to just say, yeah, we're going to hold an ounce of gold. Literally, that's what somebody said. Well, let's just get a little bit. And so I don't know the answer, but I'd love to hear what people have to say about that.
What's a significant amount?
I don't know. Laura. I mean, I'm not a money guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not an economist. I'm not an investor. But I just know, just to do it for the principle of it, that doesn't make sense. I mean, so I'm fine investing in it. If the state treasurer says, okay, I'm going to invest, $100 million in gold, and we're going to have that invested with a company somewhere that actually holds physical gold, then fine. I'm okay with that. I just don't know. as they are, but they are, they're going to be outrageous for us.
So the purpose of this then is to invest the state's money to earn money on it. Is that?
Or to have, no, to not lose
just
money
to not
ever
lose it?
If the market collapses or whatever.
I'm
one of the guys years ago who put money into a 401k or put gold somewhere into an IRA. And you can't hold it physically that way. And after years of it being there, as soon as I could get it physically, I did, because the fees I was getting ate up probably at least a third of my growth.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would think, as the state, if they would do it themselves, the growth is going to far outweigh what the expense to hold it might be. And I would think that would be the way to go. And I would support it.
So you can hold it ourselves, actually.
Yes.
Create a depository for ourselves. And I don't disagree with that. That kind of was my thinking.
Well,
this bill didn't really do that, but we could do that. We have to recognize what that's going to cost. Like, there's a cost associated with that. You're not just going to build it. You have staff, you have employees. You're definitely growing government to do that. If everybody's fine with that,
I mean, obviously, you have to see what that looks like long-term financially to do it.
Yeah.
You know, but I would think, as far as government employees, they would love to see something like that. Because they could, you know, maybe save their paycheck someday, you know.
I think somebody in the back had their hand up, too.
I do. Thank you.
Hey, Jeff.
My understanding is probably rudimentary here, but the reason, as I understand it, to have gold, whether it's on paper or is a hedge against inflation and devaluation of the dollar.
That's my understanding as well. I'm with you.
Jay, if you invest in gold rather than as opposed to holding gold,
they're dropping the security on it.
If you invest in it, you own it on paper. What happens then if there's a run on the holding company? Like, I mean, people in these banks have money on paper too, but how secure is gold held or gold invested in owning a piece of paper? I mean, and that's a question for you or anybody else.
Yeah, or maybe not me, because I don't know if I know the answer. I mean, those are the same questions I guess I have with the idea of going beyond just investing, holding it ourselves. What's the cost associated with that? And are we losing money to do that in the short term to gain long term? I'm sure we are. I just don't know what that looks on paper.
We are until if and when the value of the dollar goes down to where we are all afraid that it's going to go. I mean, we're losing money. Maybe if the dollar is strong, but if the bond falls out of the dollar, then we're already losing. We're losing money in investment too. My understanding.
Most likely, yeah.
The bill was just to require a start, a small amount. The treasurer wasn't demanded what he would do precisely, but just that he needed to start holding something, and just get started. So that, to me, that seemed like a good idea. Let's get this going at a small amount, and a lot of agreement on that point with people. And now we see the banks just recently, and the crypto recently. Well, I think that was December-ish.
All right, I'll keep going.
Yeah, keep it going.
Set up here, if that's okay. So I'll just run through some of the bills that I thought were important. Some of them Dan and Hope already touched on.
just if you have a question as I'm going through, rather than wait till the end, just interrupt me. Like, raise your hand if you have a question about one of the bills. So I think, like, the first week after session got over, somebody asked me how it went, and I said, don't ask me, I'm too grouchy, tired, too, you know, wait, give me a couple weeks, let me get home, see my family, see Johnson County people, and then I'll feel better about it. And I do. I mean, all in all, I think, you know, for the most part, it was successful. There was definitely some failures that I saw, and I'll get into those, but the successful part of it, starting with, like, House Bill number one, sequentially here, which was the supplemental budget, we put $1.4 billion into savings. I think that's a pretty good deal for the people of Wyoming.
What did you start with? What was the excess they had? Most
of about 1.8. And so we spent 4, and I'll get into that, what that was spent on. Little under 4, actually, within the budget. There was other expenditures outside the budget in some of the other bills, but in the budget itself, it was 1.8. And I think there, you know, some people have thrown around the number. There was a $2 billion surplus. I think that's fairly close to accurate because there's roughly another 100 million, 100 and some million spent outside the budget on different types of bills for different things. Water, for example, was one of them. We spend a lot of money on water, which we should. That's a huge investment for the state, and it will pay dividends for our future generations, on and on and on. But get to that in a minute as well.
So how much money do we have put away?
Total? There's about, after this, it's pushing $14 billion. In the two permanent accounts. There's additional monies in the reserve accounts, but as far as the two inviolate accounts, I think that's the figure. I want to say it's close to 20, and I'm not always great with the math and the numbers and whatnot, and I think everybody always says if you want to be really good with the numbers, you go set on appropriations for a term, and then you learn, you know, how to keep track of all the accounts. Because I will be honest, that's one of the frustrations as a legislator, is trying to keep track of all the money and where it is. And there's, you know, everybody calls them coffee cans. It's literally coffee cans. I mean, that's what we're taught. There are so many places where the money is. It's all these different accounts, and I'm just now starting to, after 3 sessions down there, you start to get a feel. I still open a book. They give you a book the first day you go down, and you can open up the book, and it shows you all the, like, arrows and here, and then it goes back up here and starts over. And so you kind of get an idea, but then about the time you figure it out, we pass a law and it changes the tips or the percentages or whatnot. So it is complicated, and even the legislators, have a hard time learning that and picking it up. But once you do, it's okay. You can kind of figure it out and pay attention, but it's not simple. Back to the $1.4 billion. Half of that went into the two permanent accounts, which cannot be touched. By per the Constitution, about half of that went into the two reserve accounts attached to those two permanent accounts. We did pass a bill this year, which was House Bill 89, which changed the investment strategy for those reserve accounts to increase their return on investment, which is why we ended up doing about half and half. So just for your edification or knowledge, the permanent accounts earn about 5% annually. I mean, over a 10-year average, it's about 5%. The reserve accounts are between 8 and 9. And so that's a huge, huge amount of money. It's a huge difference. And that's why there's, you know, we sometimes have these arguments that down there, debates about, well, where do we put the money? Do we put it in permanent accounts where future legislatures can't touch it? Or do we put it in these reserve accounts where it can earn more income? And I think right now, to be honest with you, I think everybody feels fairly safe putting it in reserve accounts. The legislature is, for the most part, doesn't want to spend more money than we have to. And so that's kind of where we are on that.
So where did that $1.4 billion, what was the source of it? Where did it come from?
Oil, gas, and coal. It's all. The majority of it's energy money. There's going to be some. There's some. Very little. I mean, the truth of it is about, and I don't have the exact percentage of it, but very little of the state's money comes from our property taxes back home. It's oil, gas, and coal. That's where that money comes from. I mean, a little bit of it's going to come from our property taxes. And it has to. I mean, the state gets 12 mills from the counties that goes into the general fund. But most of that is that's all severance tax.
How about sales tax?
Some of that would be sales tax. I think about, I'm trying to remember how much of that was sales tax. It was significant amount. Between 100 and 200 million, I believe, of that total amount. Of the 2 billion. So maybe 10%, but very little of it. And there's a breakdown, and I could get it for you, of how much came from property tax, but it's not much.
Years ago, Sarah Palin from Alaska, she was the governor, and she gave some of the money back to the people.
Yep.
The Wyoming legislators ever talk about giving money.
So we cannot because of the Constitution. We can cut taxes, but we cannot just write a check back. That's unconstitutional based on Alaska has a different provision that allows them to do that. We actually have a very specific constitutional provision that says we cannot do that. If we want to change the Constitution, we could, but as written, we cannot. So no, that discussion does not come up.
What page in the Wyoming Constitution would that be on?
It's going to be Article 1, Article 3, Section 16. It's going to be the one that prohibits payments to individuals, corporations, except for the necessary support of the poor. That's the one that gets, and I can't remember, I can look it up and get that to you too, but I can't remember it off the top of my head, but that's the one. Maybe it's. I can look it up, but there is a provision, and so that discussion does not happen, and for that reason. On top of putting $1.4 billion, somebody asked, "What did we spend? You know, what was the rest, and what did we spend it on?" I think about there was a. Roughly 115 million is some ongoing expenditures. That almost all that was related to state employees. We gave our snowplow drivers a raise. We gave our highway patrol a raise because we can't recruit. We're short 50 officers statewide. We can't recruit highway patrol officers because we don't pay them enough. And so most of the ongoing spending went to state employees and raises for state employees, and those in particular, those two, YDOT got most of that because we can't recruit. We can't get people to drive snow plows. We can't get people to drive highway patrol cars.
Will that last? Was that an annual thing?
It'll get reviewed. So when people say it's ongoing, right? All that means is you put a note in the budget that says this is part of the standard budget going forward. If we want to cut it next year when we do our actual, the 2-year budget, we can cut it. There's nothing that prevents us from doing that because we can't bind future. We can't bind ourselves for 1 year, much less 2 years. We can change whatever we do as long as it doesn't violate the Constitution. So when people talk about ongoing versus, one time, all that means is there's literally a footnote on the bottom of the page that says this is expected to be a part of the standard budget going forward. That's all it does. So.
$115 million is a lot of employees. It's more than 50 officers.
No, it was all state employees, but the focus was on those particular folks. Okay, and that was really why. I mean, a lot of it went to YDOT. I don't know the numbers on that, John. I I could find out. I could ask somebody, but I don't know off the top of my head. I just know that that was that particular number. And then the rest of the 300 and just a shade under 400 million that was included in the budget was one-time expenditures. A lot of that went to education, school funding. We fully funded that because we're in the middle of a lawsuit, and I think I think we have to at some point readdress school funding. We got to get back into the model. And it's difficult, right? It's a long-term conversation. We got to get back into that. In the meantime, I think what the legislature is trying to do is say, look, here, we this year we have the money to fully fund the model. We're going to do it at least until the end of the biennium, and then we'll hopefully, in the meantime, we're going to start working on recalibration again and digging into the model. It's more than just recalibration. We got to dig into that model and figure out where we can make changes and where we can't and where there's wiggle room. And we got to, I think the districts and the legislature and, the superintendent, we have to come together, right? Like, we need to work, figure this out together. And it can't be adversarial, because if it is, we're just going to keep fighting and we're just going to end up in more and more lawsuits, which doesn't help any of us, and it dang sure doesn't help our kids. So I think that's my hope, is that, I'm not on education, and so I don't, I'm not on that committee, so I don't get a say in that necessarily, but I know that they're talking about that, and that's one of the issues that they're going to be dealing with going forward.
$20,000 students, quite spending.
It is, and this is just me saying what I believe is, we're always going to have one of the more expensive. There's no way for Wyoming to get away from having an expensive per kid ratio. We're the most rural state in the country, and a ton of our money goes to transportation, right? Included in the $20,000 is transportation. We send our kids, I grew up just across the border in South Dakota. The longest bus ride I ever took to a wrestling meet was an hour. Our kids go 8 hours to go play sports. That's expensive. We need to look at that. And it's not all just into education. A huge portion of it goes into extracurriculars and things like that, programs that we provide for our kids. So do I think we can do better than $20,000? Absolutely. But are we ever going to get to be the same as some of these surrounding states that have population three times as ours? No. It's just that's not feasible, but we can do better. And I think that's what we got to focus on, is how can we get better, and how can we work with our schools to figure out where we can get better. That's my goal. And I know other people have different ideas, but that's mine.
Well, I haven't really delved a lot into this, but the conversations I've had with so many people about our funding of our education in Wyoming, and yes, it's true, it probably costs us more, but there's surrounding states that are rural as well. We may be the most rural. But it seems as though when you break down the spending, that the bulk of our spending is in the admin and bureaucracy and not really for the kids. And is that true? When you look at the raw numbers, when you look at what's spent on here and what's spent here, it looks like it's a lot of it's top heavy or side heavy on
it's
admin and bureaucracy.
I guess I take issue with that, especially in our district, the one right over here. That's not true. I mean, you can walk over there. There's very few people running this particular district. Maybe there are districts where that's the case, but if you go pull up the crew report and look at where all the money's going, most of it's going to teachers. I mean, that's the bulk of the expense, is the people who are actually doing the work. And that's the hard part about this particular issue is, and I don't know the percentage, I could do the math, pull up the crew report and tell you, but a huge proportion of it is going to the teachers. And you know what? I believe our teachers should be well paid. They do really hard work and they do good work. And so that's the hard part about the discussion for me, is I support our teachers. I support our educators. Do some districts maybe have too much money in overhead? Yes, but as far as the piece of the pie and the overall piece of the pie, it's very small.
Could you get us the exact percentage on how much of the education goes to admin and how much goes to teachers, and is drivers and janitors and so on, are they part of admin or are they in the teacher group?
No, I think their admin has its own column, and janitors and groundskeepers, and they have their own column. Well, that's O&M operations and maintenance, and it has its own delineation within them.
But it'd be interesting to get those.
Yeah, I'll get you. So it's on the legislature's website, and I'll get it and email it maybe to Laura, and I'll just PDF it to Laura, and she can email it out to all of you, and then you can look. So you can actually, it's really a cool report. Yeah. It shows. And I think, you know, we're pretty lucky where we live. Our district does a pretty good job of staying somewhat close to the model. A lot of districts don't. Our big, the place where we go outside the model the most is extracurricular. And that goes back to the whole transportation thing. Because we're a small 3A school. We're driving all over the state for our kids to compete in sports. And there's no way to help that. If we want our kids to do that and think it's important for them, then we have to support that. Now, could we do it a little bit different? Probably. I think there's ways, you know, you could not travel as far if you didn't, you know, or, you know, have more tournaments, less travel to Rollins and, you know, Pinedale and things like that. Yeah. So anyways, I will get that to you. I'll get it to Laura. I'll pull it off the website and just email it directly to her, and then she can distribute it. But look it up, because, for example, it has every single, all 48 districts in the state, and it has them divided out. Here's what the model says you're supposed to use on admin. Here's what we use on admin. Here's what the model says you're supposed to use on teachers. Here's what we're using on teachers. Almost every district spends way more on teachers than what the model provides. Because the average salary under the model, I think, is $42,000, which we can't hire teachers for $42,000, let's be honest. And so, I mean, not especially, you know, maybe starting teachers, fine, but teachers who've been there for 20 years, we can't pay them $42,000. They're just not going to do it. And so,
I think Wyoming's spending something like $20,000 per student. You get up to Montana, big sky country, wide open spaces, expensive bus drive and transportation and so on. Up there, they don't spend $20,000 per student. They spend somewhere around 12 or 13, I think. South Dakota, same thing. So a lot. We spend way too much money on education.
Yeah, so this goes back to my discussion about population. So we have about a third of the population of both those states. And so they have the economy of scale that we don't have. And we have to...
Well, Montana's like 800,000. Wyoming is, what, 600,000? So the populations are similar. The wide open spaces are similar. But education's got to be reeled in.
It's a discussion we got to have for sure. And it's one I think everybody agrees. No one, that's the funny thing is, I don't think there's anybody who objects to that discussion or trying to work on it. At least not in the circles I run in. It's something everybody says, hey, we got to deal with it. I mean, that's why, for example, the charter school bill is so popular, right? Like people are looking for options and they want to address this issue, and that's one of the things they, you know, feel that will help address that. I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that, you know, and I can explain that some other time. But I vote for the charter school bill. I mean, I think it gives people an option. I prefer the private school model over charter school, because charter school is still a public school. We're still all paying. The charter schools cost the exact same as Johnson County High School number, you know, or Johnson County School District number one. They cost exactly the same. Any school, they're still public. Charter doesn't mean private, it means public. It just means you get to control how it's set up as the governing board. And so
it's one more entity that you're paying for as a consumer.
That's right. The taxpayers are still paying for the charter schools exactly the same as they are. Originally it was said, you know, with this new bill that we passed this year, it's now it's 1-to-1 ratio with the public, every other public school. It used to be 80%. So, anyways, that's a different story, longer story. I'm more in favor of the voucher idea and figuring out a way to make that feasible for people as opposed to charter schools, because I think it would get people actually give people more choice of what they really what they're the choice they're really wanting to make. Moving on from spending money and saving money, a couple of the issues that we talked about during the campaign and debates that have, everybody when we were going door to door and everybody wanted to talk about crossover voting. We got that done. I think we talked about you guys talked about that a little bit. Student eligibility or fairness in women's sports, transgender sports bill, that passed as well. So it was good to get that done and across the finish line. I don't know if he signed that one yet or not, or that might be one that goes in without signature. I don't know what's going to happen on that one. So I will say this. It's going to get challenged on a constitutional level. There's no way it won't. And I think that's there's no question. It's been challenged in every other state that has done it. And we don't have any decisions on those yet, but hopefully we can ours will survive. There was a lot of talk about how we, how we do the appeal process and how people are able to work their way into the system. That's how you make it constitutional. You give some way for a transgender athlete to prove that they're not, that it's not an unfair competition. I don't really agree with that, but that's what we're going to have to show probably constitutionally at some point. Yeah, the problem is there's three kids in Wyoming total.
So we get to compete against each other. Yeah. Once you open up the scholarship level, you'll have more.
Yeah.
Once the colleges start saying you can play, you'll have more, and they won't necessarily be that, but they will do it just to rob the scholarship and go to school.
Yeah.
Yep. So, anyways. Yes, Ed.
Why was it not more? It's just A through 12. Why didn't it come to the whole aspect college?
It's a different
entity.
Different system. NCAA versus...
Yeah. That's right. So we were just trying to do it what we could actually regulate. And John answered the question perfectly. It's two different systems. So we're regulating our students through the state system. The college level people are regulated through a different system. And so that's why we didn't... There was discussion about that, and we just felt like we could... If we went that far, we were going to probably be more likely to lose the court case, and we didn't want to risk that. We didn't want to risk going that far when we thought we had a pretty good bill to get through. And so there were two different bills. I actually brought one in the House, and then this the one that passed was a Senate file. They were very similar. They just had different appeal processes, essentially. One is going to be governed... Originally, it was going to be governed. The Senate file was going to be governed by a board created by the governor. The governor would appoint people. The one I brought was just going to be state education board, and ultimately, it's going to go now to the High School Athletic Association, they already have a process in place anyway, so it'll work out fine. It actually, the way it turned out, the bill's pretty clean, and I'm hopeful that it survives. Challenging the courts. I don't think so. I mean, I don't know that. I haven't called him and say, "Hey, Mr. Governor, what are you going to do on this?" But I think it's one that's just, sometimes if it has the feel of unconstitutionality, as the governor, you're worried about that. But I don't, I think the legislature made a pretty clear statement that it's, and I think the citizens of Wyoming wanted us to do something, and so we did. So those two things were specific from, I think a lot of people, other reps around the state, senators felt the same way. Like, those are a couple issues that we just really had to deal with, so we did. And I was happy that that happened. The crossover voting bill was Jeremy Haroldson's bill, and he did a good job on that. There's one little tweak in there we're going to have to go back. I don't know if you read the news articles that the governor had talked to Jeremy Rep Haroldson about, hey, there's something we've got to clean up. Well, if you go read the bill, if you turn 18 in the blackout period, you can't declare to be a Republican. So like my daughter who voted for the first time, she turned 18 in between the primary and the general, she would not have been able to vote, you know, if she had turned 18 in the blackout period before the primary, she would not have been able to vote for me, which maybe she didn't anyways, but and so we got to fix that. We got to go back in and make it clear that if you're a first-time voter or it's your first time in Wyoming voting, that you're not subject to that, to the crossover prohibition, because as it's written, that's not clear. And so that's the constitutional problem we'll have to fix with that next session, but I'm sure we will. Not a big deal. I think Jan talked about the two pro-life bills. Those were big deals. House Bill 152, which passed the House, went to the Senate. The Senate made a bunch of changes to it. It came back, and then it passed both houses with the Senate changes in it. And then the other one was chemical abortions, which was Senate File 109. That was Senator Salazar's bill, which actually came out pretty clean, too. That was when it came over to the House. What it did is it prohibited the use of four drugs. And I went to the senator and said, why don't we just prohibit the actual procedure rather than four drugs? Because tomorrow the drugs could change names. And he said, well, if you bring me the amendment. And so I did, and I took him the amendment. So on the House side, we changed it. So now we just prohibit we prohibit chemical abortions, period. It doesn't matter what drug you use. There's still exceptions in there for, you know, rape, incest, health of the mother. That stuff didn't change. But instead of outlawing four drugs that are just going to change over time, it made it cleaner. It also probably helped, like, your pharmacist who carries some of these drugs for other reasons, because all four of the drugs had purposes outside of abortion. And so they came to us and said, hey, we're nervous about this. We don't use these drugs for abortion. We use them for blank, blank, blank. And we're not going to be able to carry them anymore because we're afraid we're going to, you know, get in trouble with the law. And so that we just cleaned that up. And so that was a big deal. That bill, as it came out, was very clean. And I think probably shouldn't have any problems. I hope it doesn't have any problems. Property taxes. I mean, that was the big reason everybody was at legislature, and when you went there, that was the problem we wanted to fix. And I'll be honest, I'm not sure we did it. And that's sort of my one disappointment with this session, is I thought we could have done better on property tax. You know, and we have two lanes in the property taxes. We have, you know, relief, which is short term. What are we going to do, you know, this year and next year? How are we going to help people short term? And then what are we going to do long term? And some people call that reform, you know, relief and reform. I just call it fixing property taxes. But whatever moniker you want to give to it, that's what we were trying to do. The problem with the whole property tax discussion was, and, you know, I'm not sure I knew this until I got down there, is there's a lot of counties that didn't see the you know, skyrocketed home prices like we did in Johnson County. The eastern part of Wyoming, Niobrara, Weston, Goshen, they had some increases, but not like we did. I mean, not double digit, you know, like maybe 4, 5, 6, 7%, but not 20 some like Johnson or 30 some like Sheridan. And so every time we, in, you know, and those weren't the only ones. There were other counties that were sort of in the same boat that, you know, said, if you do this with this bill, our county's going to go broke, because there are counties that literally rely. We're lucky in Johnson County, we have some mineral taxes, and that helps us. There are other counties that don't have that, and they're very poor. The counties don't have the money to even keep the roads up, keep their people employed, and so, and some of those are on the eastern part of the state. And so every bill we brought, we had to weigh those interests of, how do we lower our taxes in Johnson County without putting a stranglehold, you know, essentially gutting the budget of some of these other counties? Because whatever we do here is going to have an effect there. And that was just an overarching thing we had to try to talk about on every single bill, the tax bill that came out, and we did. I mean, those were some of the hard discussions, and I don't, to be honest with you, I wasn't probably cognizant of that enough before I got down there, because I was focused on home. Like, we know what happened here. We know what happened in Sheridan County.
Did you just cap the increases?
And that's an option. There was an option to do that within the Constitution. I'm a little hesitant to do that in the Constitution. I would be fine if we had a statute that just capped it at that, because I don't know what's going to happen 10 years, 20 years down the road. The thing we have to do is we have to do short-term planning and long-term planning. And I've had this discussion, I think, with you before, John, is I'm fine with any tax plan we have as long as it's well thought out and it's holistic. We need to look at our entire tax structure, because 20 years from now, minerals aren't going to be paying our bills anymore, right? I mean, we're lucky in Wyoming right now, minerals are paying our bills. But what are we going to do in 20 years when coal, the federal government has outlawed coal? How are we going to pay our bills then?
Or, so the federal government,
sell. Yeah, that's easier. I mean,
they're going to take
over
the
lien
on the country.
Yeah.
Well, I had people sending me questions.
Yes.
We're going to be here tonight, and now that you're on property taxes, this person said that you didn't vote for the cap on the increase in property taxes. Was there a reason that
I didn't vote for the amendment? There was an amendment on one of the bills. It was actually a bill that I was a co-sponsor of. So I did not vote for the amendment. This goes back to my point. I don't care if we want to put an amendment in statute, yeah, let's do it. I'll vote for it. I just didn't. When you start putting all these words in the Constitution, right now our Constitution is fairly simple. Simple is good in the Constitution. So that's my answer. That's why I didn't vote for that, because it was part of the constitutional amendment bill, which was House Joint Resolution 2, which I was one of the co-sponsors on. And that was actually the bill that did end up passing in, not as House Joint Resolution 2, but as Senate Joint Resolution 3, because literally on the last day, that bill came over, and Senate Joint Resolution 3 only applied to elderly and infirm. Well, A, we didn't even know what infirm meant. No one could tell us what that meant, and no one could decide. Everybody kept arguing about what elderly meant. You know, a lot of us wanted that to mean much lower, and there were some other folks that wanted to keep that figure higher. And so finally, on third reading, an amendment was brought to just put it in so that we could do what House Joint Resolution 2 did, which was create a separate class of property for residential property so that residential property could be taxed at a different rate than all the other properties. And that was the idea, was, you know, and there were people in the House that didn't want to do that. The first time it went through, they voted against the bill because they said, all we're going to do is raise taxes on residential. I guess that's true. You could, but that was not the intent. The intent was so that we could lower taxes on residential and allow us to have more flexibility within the constitutional framework to create statute. If it passes, which we now get to vote on next year, it'll give us a lot more flexibility on how we assess taxes against residential property, at what rates we assess against residential property.
Would that include ag property, or would that be considered business?
No, ag's separate. It has its own provisions, A, within the Constitution, and B, within the statutes. I mean, an ag gets taxed at such a low rate as it is that I don't think anybody was really worried about that. You know, it goes up and down based on market value. You know, it's a 5-year rolling average, and state lands determines that, and then with the Department of Revenue, and then that's what our assessors get, is these figures based on actual what we're paying. You know, what's a rancher paying for actual market value for ag land, and that's how that's determined. But that wasn't really any of our discussion. Really, it was limited. I think what we're trying to do is get relief to homeowners. We passed two bills, well, three bills that dealt with property taxes. I'm glad to get into why a lot of these failed. I mean, a lot of it has.
Because people are putting amendments that make them the bills useless, and then.
Which bill are you talking about?
The Human Rights Act, putting little bills in there that or amendments in there that then make the bill useless so that they're then killed or voted for.
So the Life as a Human Right Act passed. The abortion bill passed.
But when you're putting in, I'm using as an example, but when you're putting in these little amendments, that's what makes them the changes in, that they become useless.
So let's
like game plan. I just want to know what was the resolution? Are we getting a tax relief? How much? What percent?
That's a good. So I explained, and I'll explain it again. I don't think we did what we needed to do. And I voted. You can go look at my voting record. I voted for every single tax bill that came through the House, like every single one, because we needed to do something. So I can only defend my actions. I can't defend everybody else's, but I can tell you what I did. In the end, I was happy to vote for the amendment that made the joint resolution, which is a constitutional amendment, because to be honest with you, the only way we fix our residential property taxes is by amending the Constitution. We don't have any other choice. And so there's various ways to amend the Constitution. I think this is a good option because it then gives us the flexibility as the legislature to change the laws that pertain to residential houses. Right now we can't do that because they're taxed as a group with the other types of property. So in next year, in the election, 2024, you'll get to vote on whether we pass that constitutional amendment or not. In between now and then, if somebody comes up with a better idea, we can put that on the ballot too. I mean, we have options. We're not dead in the water. So the constitutional amendment, we still have time. We can work on something better if somebody has a better idea. The other bill that passed, and write this number down, you can go look at it, is House Bill 98. And that was a tax refund. Wyoming has a property tax refund program. I'm not a huge fan of it because it takes paperwork and it takes time and you got to apply for it and you got to send it into the State Department of Revenue to get your refund. But what we did do was increase the amount of your taxes that are subject to refund. So I think we went from 50 to 75%. So you can get 75% of your taxes refunded. And then we increased who's eligible. So it went, I think it's now 120. If you make 125% or less than the median income for your county, which I can't remember what, at one point I knew what that number was for Johnson County, you can apply for that too. So we're not a particularly, we have a lot of working class people in Johnson County, so we're one of the counties that will actually benefit from that bill more maybe than some of the others. But I don't know the exact statistics, like how many people in Johnson County qualify for that. But you can apply. We put a bunch of money in. That was part of the budget, part of the spending within the budget. We fully funded that, or what they think will be fully funded. So they're, you know, the mathematicians in the budget office at LSO said, here's how many people total could qualify for this. Here's how much money you're going to need to. If everybody applies, this is how much money you're going to need. That's what we put in there. It doesn't cover everybody. That's why I'm not super, you know, I'm not excited. I'm not touting that we did some great thing on property.
It's a form of socialism. It only benefits some taxpayers.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know if I call it socialism, but I agree that it only benefits.
It's income redistribution.
It only benefits some property owners. I don't disagree with you, Mark. I mean, yeah. That's why I'm saying I'm not standing up telling you we did something great because I'm not saying we did. But I will say this, the resolution, it might get us there, right? The constitutional amendment might get us to where we need to go so that we can do the things I think we need to do. But we knew that going in, right? I mean, all of us that had studied that and looked at it knew meaningful relief for everybody is going to take some time. It's gonna require us to get it on the Constitution, you know, on the ballot, into the Constitution, so that we can then go in and fix it.
If they could give the lower income people a rebate, why can't they give everybody one? Why was that not constitutional?
Because that's the definition of poor. I mean, that's the argument, that that's the definition of poor within the terms of the Constitution. That's the argument.
Really?
Yep. So that's the argument we're having on the floor. That's what we were able to do. Again, I voted for all of these bills. I voted for other ones that would have applied to more people. I voted for the deferral program. I mean, I could go down the list. There are lots of people who didn't, and part of that was personalities, right? Like they had their idea, and they only wanted their idea. I wanted all the ideas, and I think there's a lot of people who did, but you know, a lot of the bills failed. I mean, in committee, a lot of bills failed in committee. We didn't necessarily get a vote on all of them on the floor. I think there was a few more House bills that went through tax-wise, and so we probably got to vote more on the House side than the Senate. But the Senate sent some good ones over too, and we didn't necessarily get to vote on those on the floor either.
You know, you come with these figures, raise up the amount taxed over lower, all this. What happens, or why is, I never hear nothing about it. If I buy a $100,000 house, that's what I pay taxes on. You buy it from me for $200,000.
Yep, so that's acquisition, right? Acquisition value, that's what California does. Representative Jennings actually brought a bill. So we're between now and next year, we're going to do a study on what that looks like, how that would actually work. He wanted to get into the specifics and spend some time, and so there's essentially a group of people that have been assigned to study that and then possibly bring us a bill next year. Again, that's going to require a constitutional amendment. That's a different option than the other one that we already passed, and that's why I said if there's a better idea that comes along and we can make it work and it seems feasible, then
is
we would vote on that.
Amendment to the Constitution?
Yep.
Than what you're firing up?
Yep.
Okay.
Which at that point, then we'd probably have to do some education, right? Like, okay, this amendment's better than this one. Let's go with this one. That's not uncommon, but it's not easy either. I mean, I think we can do it at that, you know, if we get to that point, because you wouldn't necessarily need them both, although you could do both. So they're not mutually exclusive. Actually, the acquisition study could only apply to homes. And so if that's the case, it could be a sub constitutional amendment under the other one, and they would play well together. And that was sort of our thought, was depending on how an additional constitutional amendment comes, we can do both and get us further down the line than we would have with just one. So, but it's a good point. It's one of those that we're studying, looking at. I don't mind the idea as long as we understand how it looks, so we can plan for our local government. I mean, because this, to be honest with you, this affects our counties and our cities the most. They're the ones who depend on the mill levies and our residential properties. And so how do we stabilize their funding? I don't say we have to keep it the same, but at least so they can plan. That's the main thing, is what's that look like for them going forward, and so that it's thoughtful. Let's not just jump in head first. Let's at least figure out what it looks like and make a plan so they can plan accordingly. But it's one actually I think there's probably going to be quite a bit of support for once we figure out how it looks and how to do it without making mistakes.
Even if they do fix the tax problem, then I don't have any confidence that Wyoming will fix the tax problem. Even if you did, you gotta stop that spending. You gotta take that spending. And if you want to add some valuable project or funding, then you take away from someplace else, you balance the books, just like at home.
So
my kid needs new shoes, and I need groceries, but I only got enough money for one or one and a half of the other. You take away from one place or someplace, or go get a second job.
So
with the government, a second job was my taxes.
So here's what I would say, you know, I obviously I hear that a lot, you know, and I don't. I'm not saying you're wrong. The question I always ask is, okay, you tell me where to cut.
Oh, I could.
Make me a list. Make me a list. Send it. Send it to me.
$20,000 a year to educate students. Let's start there.
Say that again, Mark. Sorry.
Let's start with the $19,000 to $20,000 per student we spend. When Texas does it for $6,000, Utah does it for $8,000. I mean, we've already had this discussion. You can't tell me that Wyoming can't do it better. The money's not going to these teachers. It's going somewhere else.
I'll send you the report. You can look at the report. It's going to the teachers. But, and we
why can all these other states do it so much cheaper?
I don't know. And I'm with you. Like, I said we can do it better. I just don't know how much. I mean, we're never going to get down to $6,000 or $7,000 a kid. We're just not. That's not feasible. I agree. Like, I think we can maybe do that. But we got to, you know, we got to look at it. We got to do it thoughtfully. And we got to do it not against our education system, but with our education system. And they're willing to help. They are. If I go over here and say, okay, help me figure this out, they will sit down and talk to me. I mean, they will. And that's and we just got to have those conversations. And
the only way that that will ever happen is you go in and say, we're going to cut. Where do you want to cut? And here's how much you have to cut. Because nobody, it's just like if somebody said, hey, you want to be the county attorney? Well, hey, you know what? It's only going to be $50,000 this year. And you're going to go, yeah, thanks. It's not going to be enough. You know, and you're going to move on and go somewhere else. And that's the only, people aren't willingly going to give up their pot of gold, okay? You're going to have to tell them how much. And
the math doesn't add up. If it's 20,000 per student, let's pretend it's only 10 kids per class. And no, it's not. That's $200,000. Teacher's not making $200,000. And of course, so let's cut that in half. Half is for like the books and the desks and all that stuff. They're not making $100,000. Something's not adding up mathematically.
Well, here's what you have to understand is if they're making 60, it's probably costing them 100. Okay, because the benefits,
I'd like to know what the administrators are making, John.
Oh,
how much is Charles on?
He's saying that they're not
only 150,000.
No,
130.
But that they're not part of the pie. That it's mostly
one teacher. And we used to have.
That's not adding up.
We used to have an assistant superintendent as well.
How many other people are there making 60? How many people are there in the
68? I'll send you that. So you can, Mark, when I get it to Laura, you can look at it.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah, just look at it. Check it out because it's very educational.
57%. You guys gave tax relief to other people, and then I'm homeschooled. And I'm sending all that money over there, and Texas is doing it for a third. So it don't all add up.
Well, Barry, we've covered a lot of this already, but my question to you is your position then that the state spends only as much as they need to and there is no wasteful spending?
Nope, that's not what I said. I said, help me figure out where to cut.
We have the second highest rate of public employees in the nation behind Alaska.
Yep, we do.
And then why not?
And we can't keep them. We cannot keep our public employees. So if you want to sign up to be a road snowplow driver, I'm guessing I can find you a job. My point is, we can't keep them, and that's not our. I mean, that's not our problem. That's not the biggest problem, but it maybe is a problem. But I'm serious when I say, if you want us to cut stuff, you have to give us ideas. You can't just say cut across the board. That doesn't work. I mean, you can't just say, let's go cut snowplow. Let's just cut across the board because that means we're going to cut snowplow drivers.
You could do a flat rate cut across every department.
Every
it doesn't mean that they're going to fire snowplow drivers. They're going to figure out another way. Hey, maybe we won't buy that new truck, or maybe we don't need
maybe
we don't need X.
But, John, I just don't think that's the best way to go about it. I'd rather, if you seriously have an idea to help me figure that out, I'm all for it.
Have we done an audit to see where the money's going?
Say that again, Mark. Sorry, I can't hear you.
Are there audits available that show where the money is going?
Yes. Yes.
It's just hard to imagine that all these other, and I know we're rural, but as Greg pointed out, Montana's very rural. Much bigger than Wyoming and has 200,000 or 300,000 more people. Other states are able to do this stuff much cheaper per student and per employee, so I'm just wondering where the money's going.
And you're saying there are audits out there.
Yes.
There are places to show that.
Yeah, and I'll try to figure, I'll see if I can't get one of those for you, too.
I'll see.
Well, explain, and it was on the board earlier. I mean, we just, because you guys all pat yourselves on the back with the $1.5 million in savings, but there's going to be a $45 million deficit because you're going to add $110 million in programs. So that there's a deficit there, which, I wonder who's paying for that. Jews, all these taxpayers. I'm tired of paying the money. I'm tired of it.
So
it's got that, to stop.
So that goes...
This gentleman said here, if we have to operate our house fiscally responsible, then the damn government better start. Because we can't afford it anymore. We can't. We cannot.
I appreciate that. So the $110 million, as I explained at the beginning, that all went to employees. It didn't create new programs. That ongoing funding went to employees. That was to try to keep people working for you. And whether we like it or not, it's not cheap. They're not going to work for nothing. John just pointed it out. They're going to go work in the private sector where they can make twice as much money. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to keep your roads safe. We're trying to keep your roads plowed. We're trying to do all that stuff. That's where the money went. If there's something, this goes back to my comment a few minutes ago. If there's something you think we don't need as your rep, I'll work to get rid of it. That's my point. If you have ideas, it's easy to say, let's cut government. That's very easy to see. That's what we all want to do. But when it actually comes down to brass tacks and figuring out where we do that and how we do that, I need help.
Maybe we don't send kids on 8-hour bus rides on taxpayers' dollars.
That's a good option.
Well, like I said, my property taxes went up 57%. I guess maybe it's less kids all around and more sports. Yeah.
University of Wyoming is highly funded.
You have a coach at UW, they have a football coach, 107,000. Take 40,000 from this one.
But the money for that coach is not coming out of your taxpayer dollar. For the most part, that money is coming from alumni and different other sources. College athletics is just unbelievable funding. Unbelievable funding.
Yeah, it's not general. It's not generally funded. It's not. Doesn't come out of.
Blows your mind how much money they'll put into athletics at a college. Oh, I was a college athlete. It's unbelievable, and you can't understand how any school can operate that like that. It just blows you away. But it's a lot of alumni. And as far as state funding of state employees, my daughter was a state employee. She didn't make any. She made less than $15 an hour. Then she got a raise. But they've been frozen for years. And you can't tell me these snowplow drivers and the state employees, They're just working for nothing, guys. The mines are going to be the ones closing because those people are leaving the mines because they're not getting paid. And, you know, things are tight. Things are going to get tighter. Your power bill? Huh. You haven't seen nothing yet. You got to be on Pacific Corp. Because they're going to raise your power bill because it's been going in solar and electric. So, you know, things are tight. So, you know, these guys are working their asses off trying to figure out how we're going to keep this. And we got to help them figure out how we're going to keep it going because that's the only way. We got to work together.
Yeah. So we need to wrap it up. Because the legislative ladies have a couple of closure things. I have one more question for you, because this astounded me, because I didn't know this was happening. You in your op-ed this week, you said you spent too much time on bills from out-of-state entities. out-of-state entities, take 5 minutes and explain how out-of-state entities have so much influence on our legislative process.
Okay, I'm happy to do that.
Because that just, I was like, what?
Yeah, so let's take the Life is a Human Right Act bill, written by somebody from not in Wyoming.
Right.
It's written by an out-of-state legal team. And I had to, you know, I had all sorts of issues with the bill as it originally came to the House floor because there was all sorts of constitutional issues. We ended up fixing those in the Senate, but I couldn't get it done in the House. And I'm battling with out-of-state legal teams and saying, this doesn't work in Wyoming. Like, the bill has a good idea. Like, I support the idea, but words on the page matter. How we write things matters. It can't just be the idea. It has to be the idea in practice. And so, for example, that's one. The chemical abortion bill, also written by an out-of-state legal team, they actually worked with me. They had lawyers in the Capitol from out-of-state sitting there. And when I worked on the amendment on the chemical abortion bill, I worked with them. I had to work with them. And so there's all sorts of these special interest groups that send ideas, send lawyers, send lobbyists, send staff to the Capitol. And they bring these bills that are drafted not by our LSO lawyers who draft everything to comport with Wyoming drafting standards, Wyoming law, so that it actually fits within our books and makes sense. They draft it however they want it, and it doesn't necessarily fit. And so we're spending a lot of time on trying to fix these bills that are being drafted by lawyers from somewhere else. And it takes up a lot of time. Rather than just taking the idea to our folks that we pay good money to work for us and say, hey, here's a general idea, right? Or even give us the bill, but let us fix it. Like, here's the language we want. Can you put it into form that works for Wyoming? But that's not what we're doing. And so we're spending an inordinate amount of time on not only bills that are from out of state, but just issues that I'm not sure, you know, are we need to worry about in Wyoming. There's a lot of those, and they're not necessarily on this list, but there's a lot of bills that make it, you know, that get brought out and we talk about, and we spend a lot of time and money. I mean, the legislature isn't free, right? You want to talk about paying taxes, you're paying us to go down there. You're paying staff to man the legislature. And some of this stuff I feel like isn't money well spent. I'd rather have spent 2 weeks talking about property taxes, right? That's what I wanted to do. Like, let's really focus on these Wyoming problems that we need to fix. Property taxes. You're all of you are right. Education funding. Like, let's get into that discussion. But let's not waste time on issues that are being shipped in by outside groups.
So are those groups like, that's like a lobbyist group?
They're national groups that are just,
I know, but so how does it get into our legislature? So these groups appeal to certain legislators to bring this in and then it gets brought in that way?
Yes.
Like a lobbyist situation?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So obviously it has to come through a legislator, but they have connections with these different groups, right? And some of them are national, you know, well-known. Some of them aren't necessarily well-known, but they're still national groups, and I don't necessarily always know who they are. But, you know, I just have a strong opinion that I'd rather do work for all of you. We may not always agree, but I work for you. And if you come to me with an issue, I'd rather work on your issue than some issue that is brought to me from Florida. Florida can do their own thing. I'm not worried about Florida. I'm worried about what's happening in Wyoming and how we're going to solve our problems by Wyoming people, not by people from somewhere else who don't, you know, the only time they come to Wyoming is to pop into the Capitol for session. They've never spent a dollar here or stayed a night in our hotel or lived in our towns. And so it's becoming, I can tell you, I think part of it is Wyoming's, you know, we're very open, right? Like, Wyoming politics is open. Anybody can come down and get in the middle of it. It's, you know, and anybody, you know, it's, And I think that makes it easy for some of these groups to target us and say, hey, I'm going to go to Wyoming and get a bill passed in Wyoming that does this, and then I'm going to spiderweb out from Wyoming to these other places. Or, you know, let's make Wyoming second on our list or third on our list because we can do it there because we are, you know, we're a conservative state. We believe in those ideals. And so some of these, you know, I think some of these groups think they can come here and really do make a huge difference, even though it's an issue that has nothing to do with Wyoming. And so that's really what I was getting at is, and we spent a lot of time this session doing that, rather than focusing on things that, you know, we should have been working on.
Do you need 300 bills or do you need 20, you know?
Right.
So, Jeff, we're going to move on. Sorry.
You know how to call me.
Thanks, Barry.
Yep, thank you.
I have just a couple bills that were introduced on prohibiting foreign countries investing in Wyoming land. And there was two bills, one on the House side and one on the Senate side, and both of them failed. To kind of give you a little perspective, in 2018, the government owned 46.7% of the land in Wyoming. Prior to that, in 2008, the government owned 50%. So it's down a little bit. And then as when I was doing my research on, okay, what foreign companies are involved.
The government's selling them?
The government did sell 3.3% in that 10-year period. But in the meantime, we have more foreign purchase entities coming in and buying agricultural lands and also forest lands, which is mainly, believe it or not, in the south and the east. And then we also have them buying land to put windmills. And on the windmills, there's a big push on that the easement that they want to. The governor vetoed that. So in other words, you can have a foreign company that wants to put up windmills in the power lines. They can go across your property using eminent domain. And that he had vetoed that. Who do you think, what the country owns the most of the United States?
Canada.
Canada owns 12.8 million acres in America. The next one, and that's mainly oil and gas that they own. Then the second place is the Netherlands. They own 4.9 million. They're oil, timber, and farmland. And then the third country, believe it or not, is Italy. And Italy specializes in putting up wind farms. They own 2.7 million acres in Texas for wind farms. Fourth one is the UK, and they kind of focus on farming in New Mexico, Colorado, California, and Washington. And they own 2.5 million acres. Germany is fifth. A German company, Bayer, bought Monsanto as far as, you know, if you're in ag chemicals, and they own 2.3 million. Portugal's next, and they specialize in wind. They bought 1.5 million acres in Maine for their wind farms. France also owns wind farms They have 1.3 million acres. 41,000 acres is in New Mexico alone. And it just goes on down. China, believe it or not, is down 16th in land ownership, which kind of surprised me. They right now own 383,000 acres, so that but they're increasing. Now, remember, these statistics are for 2020, and we all know North Dakota and South Dakota has had some issues with Canada. So the House bill was, there was two House bills. The one was a little iffy, and the second one was House Bill 116, and Craigo voted against that bill to prevent foreign agriculture ownership in Wyoming. And that also stated what countries, it was going to be Russia, China, and any country, foreign country, that was designated as a state sponsor of terrorism under federal law.
And he voted against it.
He voted against it.
He said it was unconstitutional. So why did anyone bring that up to him? Why?
Yeah. And then the Senate file also had one that I thought was a really good bill on preventing foreign ownership. And the foreign ownership that's here now, it would kind of cut it off right away at July. And they could own an acre, but that was it on that one. That died in the Ag Committee on that one. And then for anybody that's interested in ag, or the as far as the percentages and acres, and I've got maps on here for where in Wyoming what foreign investment has already taken over. You're more than welcome to take one of these. And this is as of 2021, so it's pretty up to date. One thing good about Johnson County is one of three counties that has no foreign ownership, believe it or not. So I forget what the sublet might be, the other one, and I forget what the other county is. But next door, Campbell County's got foreign ownership. And so that's my part. Oh, one happy note. I don't know how many people leave their car idling. Did you know that was illegal?
Yeah.
Well, you're okay now because we passed that.
What is there's 20 cars at the grocery store all over the run.
Yeah, and nobody could cite it.
An observation on this foreign ownership and foreign investment in our land, it's a vicious cycle when you have an administration like we do now that is pushing this green energy stuff so much, because just like the conservation easements, that creates a huge incentive for people to. There was a Wyoming Beartooth company, Wyoming company, that was buying huge ranches in California, neighboring ranches. And the reason they're buying them is because of the supplemental funding that goes for this green energy stuff. They buy these ranches, put an easement on them, take them out of production, get a bunch of money from the government for this environmental stuff. So
that's why these foreign companies are putting wind farms.
That's exactly what I was saying. That's
we're paying them to put up a wind farm while they own the land.
We have to do something about this foreign investment, but we got to realize what's really pushing it. Where it's
one of the things with the foreign investment and the green energy stuff that I've read today, thanks to our governor, it made it all the way to his desk. There was a bill about eminent domain.
and saying that green energy companies and stuff, it was shoring up our eminent domain already that's in our Constitution.
Our private property.
Private property versus eminent domain. And this was going, and we already had, and the argument was, well, we already have protection on eminent domain, blah, 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 but the bill on eminent domain is more, that which is currently in our Constitution, I think, states more, it's kind of a gray area that is more for energy and oil and gas. And what this bill was going to shore up is that all the green energy with the solar and wind, so that they wouldn't have just carte blanche and couldn't come in and do eminent domain on anybody's property. It made it to our governor's desk, and he vetoed it, just so you know.
And what, another thing that this survey, or these stats that I have on foreign investment, the federal government in 1978 required foreign companies and individuals to register with the USDA. And they have, and then they went through, and they get a fine if they don't file by a certain time. And I went through, I could not believe how many have not paid their fine.
Kind of like the oil company that owes us forever, right?
And the other thing that can happen, like it's happening in Arizona, with all the foreign investment there in the farmland, their water table has gone down considerably. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's global
warming. Oh, Harriet had an awesome moment last night when she was speaking. I'll get to you in a second. She was talking about, everyone's talking about we need more
infrastructure
because we're running out of water because the Colorado River's running out of water and all that. And Harriet goes, it's not global warming. It is not anything except California. Has the same infrastructure they had when they had a population of 16 million.
And now they've got 60 million.
Now they've got 60 million, and they have done nothing with their water infrastructure in 50 years. So they're just sucking all the water, and it has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with climate change or global warming. And I thought that was such a profound statement.
Maybe while she's passing that, I'll get started because I got about 10 minutes yet of material that I think you'll be interested in, a lot of it. In answer to your question, I wish you would have stayed because I had some things in this section that I was hoping. But it doesn't really matter if he hears. What matters is if the voters hear and know for this next election. And if he's what you want, if you want someone to the left, you know, then that's what you've got. What we voted for, though, the citizens in Wyoming voted for a legislature that's over 92% Republican. We want Republican values. We want the Republican Party platform. However, the work that's being done in Cheyenne does not reflect that. Many excellent bills, I already talked about some, were killed. The House vote over and over and over. If you go to the bills and you click on the thing called digest, that gives you the votes. And if you go to that, you'll see over and over, very close to 36 to 26. The 26 is the Wyoming Freedom Caucus. The 36 are 31 Republicans voting with the 5 Democrats. And it's over and over and over. And you need to get that out there to the people that that's happening. 31 who run, at the chamber breakfast this morning in Sheridan, all our Sheridan and Johnson County representatives and senators were there. And Representative Pendergraft said, voters need to check out better who is running, not just check the box because there's an R there. Senator Biteman said, the Senate did pretty well, but not so much in the House. They need reinforcements. Senator Kinski, who is our senator, said, and he's Sheridan too, he's both, parts of both, he said, 2 to 3 House seats need to change. I would say 6, at least. With 2 more votes, only 2 more votes in the House, Representative Mark Jennings from Sheridan would have been the speaker. It was 27 to 29, and we would have had him as a speaker, and things would have been different. We still would have had that split, though, in the 36 to 26. But at a meeting a couple months ago, I was saying that, if you were there, that the committees, and I mentioned earlier, are set by the speaker. Of those Freedom Caucus people, 26, only three of them got more than one committee assignment. They're just sitting on one committee. Of the Democrats, where there's only five, four of them got more than one committee. And all those liberal Republicans who run as Republicans but don't but vote with the Democrats most of the time, they got more than one. Now, I do want to clarify that, just quick, there's some committees that are so intense that you only get one. So you got to know that Appropriations Committee is so busy. And the Speaker of the House isn't on a committee, for instance. So it's not always like that. But for the most part, that means that when a bill goes to committee, those committees are stacked.
Speaker of the House was Summers, and who was running against Summers was Mark Jennings. And Mark Jennings
got 27, and Summers got 29.
Two votes. Take a guess on who Craig voted for, Summers or Jennings.
He openly supported Summers.
He introduced him. He introduced him in the deal. There was a bill brought to limit masks and vaccine mandates, and that was killed by a high appropriation put on it on the House floor called a poison pill amendment. That poison pill amendment was brought by Johnson County Representative Barry Crago, adding $850 million to a mask and a vaccine bill, an appropriation. Wyoming's special session a year and a half ago was brought just to address the federal overreach on COVID mandates. That was a colossal failure. We got nothing out of that session. Now this time, there were a couple of bills again, we got nothing. Nothing.
He also voted against the bill, Dan.
Laura, that's why.
After the boys
really wanted to ask him about that.
After the poison bill amendment, he voted against the bill. He helped kill it.
Well, I'm sure he wanted to avoid any.
Well, let me tell you what really happened.
But with that, it's too much money on that.
I was there. It passed second read. The bill passed second read. They would have outlawed vaccine and mask discrimination in Wyoming. Barry added the poison pill amendment before the third read because he knew it would pull four or five people off of it that voted for it on second read. And then he voted against it on third read and it failed. We were that close to getting a bill in Wyoming that made it illegal to prohibit vaccine and mask discrimination.
Well, it had been taken off in the Senate, though, $850 million.
Well, no, it died right there. That killed it.
Yeah, it killed it. Poison pill, they call them poison pill amendments when they're high appropriations like that. The spending was high.
I really wanted to confront Barry about that tonight. But what we really need to focus on is getting that information out.
Rick,
it's our job.
Some have already talked about this. I think you might have said it, Lisa. There's ongoing spending of $110 million. There's $65 million created from their investments this year. So they invested that money, $1.4 billion, and they get interest off of it, it brings in $65. But $45 million is left over still from the spending this year. They added 18 public employees. Wyoming, by far, has more public employees than any other state. The next closest is Alaska. We are just huge on our public employees. Well, yes, some of it is rural, but so is Alaska.
Twice the average of the states in the United States. Wyoming has twice as many public employees as the average across the nation.
And those are taxpayer supported, and some is needed. But adding those 18 in the condition our country is in financially, not smart. And they brought back spending to where it was 2 years ago. And so all the cuts that were made 2 years ago, back now. Senator Biteman said this morning that in this session, the taxpayer got hosed. He says it like it is. I wish you could hear him speak sometime, and some of these other fellows too.
$2 million I could have put up, you know.
The property tax bills, three of the best bills, two of them came from Sheridan County, Beitman and Jennings, and a new guy from Casper, Locke, Representative Locke. Representative Prego talked about Jennings' bill. The problem with that bill, it's a good bill, and it could help us in the future, but it's several years down. We're opening bills now that are scary, and last year, and this year's projected to be worse. So what they had was House Bill 256. That was a one-year property tax holiday for this year. That could have helped us right now. Jennings' bill was brought last year, and they killed it. So the fact that it's out further, and if it has to go to the ballot, it's on the ballot in 26. If it would have been brought last year, if it had passed last year, it could have been at least brought on the ballot in 24. So it's unlikely it can be on in 24. It's possible, but I wouldn't count it. The Revenue Committee for the last 2 years was assigned to study the property tax problem. They can't say they didn't know. They were assigned. You can go to the legislative site and you can see that they were supposed to do that. And 2 years ago, there was a bill brought by Chuck Gray addressing property tax. 1 year ago, there was Jennings, and on the Senate side, there was Salazar's bill. All of those bills were killed. Now, HB 256, the tax holiday, killed. HJ2 was the one that Representative Prego said there was the cap. They tried to cap valuations in that bill. That was that guy from Casper, a good new Freedom Caucus guy named Locke, and he brought that amendment, but it didn't make it either. There were two property tax valuation cap bills, HJ4 and SF125, killed this year. SF136 is a good story, and you should know a little about it. It was brought by Senator Beitman, the one who said you got hosed, and it was killed. It passed through the Senate. It started on his side on the Senate, and it passed. And what it did was the value of your home, right now they take it times 9.5%, and then that's what you're taxed on. Well, he initially had it at 7.5%. The Senate raised it to 8.5%. And it passed. So it would have been across the board, everybody would have gotten some tax relief. It came over to the House, it went to the House Revenue Committee. Again, remember the committees are stacked against us. The Revenue Committee put on a poison pill. Somebody said, you said, why isn't the government tightening its belt? Well, if we're gonna give this relief to the taxpayer, we have to have this money from the taxpayer from another place. So they added in $253 million to that bill in the House Revenue. The Senate didn't do that, but the House Revenue Committee did that. That adding an appropriation causes it to have to go to the Appropriations Committee, which we could call fondly in the House, the Kill Committee, the House Appropriations Committee. I got to kind of read so I get everything here.
Well, luckily, representatives come up every 2 years.
Yeah, next year.
For a senator, so we've got an opportunity to make changes.
In the House, which is our tougher spot. By this time, the House Appropriations Committee had already ruined many good bills by substituting other bills for them, killing them on the spot, or sending them back to the floor in that ruined condition, including two gun bills, which Mark could tell you in detail after we get done if you want, or he might come up if people have time, two ESG bills brought by Beitman. He got there, they substituted his first bill. They gave him a rough time, and then they substituted for his bill. He didn't even stick around for the second one. I mean, that is unusual. He said he's never seen anything like it. He said to that committee, I've never been treated like this. I would never treat you like this. And with Chloe's Law, which was about children not being allowed to attempt to change gender, they slashed that bill. And then they sent it back to the floor with this substitute language, which was ruining the bill. The sponsor said, you may as well forget it. That was a guy named Bouchard. That bill's no good anymore. So that bill went to the bottom of the stack on the House floor, and if you read that it was the conservatives that killed that, it wasn't. It was the Appropriations Committee that ruined that bill. You kind of have to know, you know, what you're reading, what source you're reading. On Biden's property tax bill, they left that poison pill amendment in appropriations, $253 million, and they voted unanimously no. Everyone on the Appropriations Committee, seven no's, and they sent that now worthless piece of paper back to the House floor where it goes to the bottom of the stack. So again, if you hear the conservatives did it, it wasn't. It was the Appropriations Committee and the Revenue Committee that put that big appropriation on there. The Legislative Action Committee opposed any property tax bill which picked winners and losers. If you get a break, a refund, and you don't, we didn't like that bill because that's just not right. The Wyoming Constitution requires, and this is the wording, all taxation shall be equal and uniform within each class of property. Equal and uniform. How can that be that one neighbor gets a break and the other one doesn't?
So the bill they passed violated the Constitution.
Well, the legislature has to take it in equally, but they get around it. They do an end run by refunding it unequally. And when you hear that median income, there's other rules, so I don't know how many people are even going to qualify, because your tax bill has to be 10% of your income. Well, that's a pretty big tax bill. So as far as I understood that bill, and I spent hours and hours and hours studying it, I don't know how many people are going to qualify unless they live in Teton County.
Right, but one of the things with that bill, if you look at housing prices today, most of the people that qualify for that refund can't afford to own the property that they live in.
Yes.
So it's kind of like, yeah, we did something for no one.
Well, and even if it was, let's say that Johnson County, you could make $70,000 and qualify, but you couldn't make $71,000. Well, what if the one who makes 71 has four kids, and they want to put braces on the teeth, or they want to have some piano lessons or something, and the neighbor makes 70 and they qualify? I mean, is that fair? Like Mark was saying earlier, that is not the way to do business. Biteman's bill would have been across the board; everybody would have had the same break, but it had to be killed. The 11th hour bill change, that was a bad way to do business too. Here you are, the session's almost over, and here comes a new bill. Suddenly, you're on the floor. There's a new bill. They totally erased the old bill and put in a new bill. Kinski was on the radio, said he doesn't even know if it's constitutional. I don't think it is, because they changed the title even of the bill. anyway, that I don't know if that'll be any help for us. But I don't particularly care that it separates out rental properties. So if you have rental properties, you don't get a break. The tax went up on those too, but those don't count. If your Wyoming home is a second home, that doesn't count. Commercial doesn't count. What I want to say is like what the representatives and senators said this morning. Unless we have a turnover of some of these big government, high-taxing legislators, and we don't need a bunch, but we need about three or six in the House. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. We're not going to. You know it, because they had opportunities this year, and they killed them. They had the property tax holiday that would have helped you this year. Everybody, not just some, and they killed it. They had Biteman's bill, and they killed it. Now, they passed Jennings' bill, but it's years down the road, and they still have to legislate on it. If we don't get better legislators, nothing. So what I would suggest, I'm sorry, I want to kind of back up. This was said on the Senate floor that valuations in Wyoming went up 36%, and I think it's a good number for a lot of people to learn, because home valuations between 2019 and 22 went up 36%. They're taking in that tax somewhere. I don't know if it's all county. I mean, it's a split. It's state and county. But why won't they pass a property tax bill?
Because
they want to keep it.
It cuts their revenue.
But it's not before 19, it wasn't. They want to keep the added income.
They want to keep their revenue.
for the pro-life people in the room, which is probably most of you, in June of 20, or last year, they passed this bill that was nicknamed the Trigger Bill. And what it would do is when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, the bill would take effect. That was the word trigger. It would take effect and it would outlaw abortions. Well, the Supreme Court did, in June of 2022, overturn Roe v. Wade. Immediately, there was an injunction in Teton County, a judge, against that bill. It was sent down to the Supreme Court in Wyoming. And in December, the Supreme Court in Wyoming sent it back to Teton County. Where it is now, I don't know, but it's not done. It probably has to go back to the Supreme Court, but they weren't happy with some of the findings of the district court. So it's in limbo, is what I say. That bill is in limbo. And during that time now, from June of 22 when Roe v. Wade was overturned until now, 60 babies in Wyoming have been aborted on the average. We have 80 to 100 abortions a year. Our representative brought an amendment to the bill this year called Life is a Human Right. And that amendment said that this Life is a Human Right won't go into effect until this is done, until all that judiciary stuff is done. So that means that Life is a Human Right, which many people thought was a good bill, and that amendment passed. So that would make that bill, you would have to wait. How long? How many more babies?
It would be forever, because they'll just keep continuing that channel.
Maybe. I think that they'll just say it's unconstitutional bill. And they'll get rid of the trigger bill.
He also voted against it in the Judiciary Committee. Mm-hmm. That's on the record.
Mm-hmm.
He can't hide from that vote.
Voted against it. And you can see his amendment. You can look up his amendment. But what I wanted to say is the Senate overruled his amendment. They took it off. And who took it off? Well, our Senator, Kinski, who's also a lawyer. And he's a seasoned lawyer of many years. He's much older. So he and Senator Steinmetz together brought an amendment to take that amendment that Barry Crago put on off. So the bill passed without that. So it's a good bill now. But that's a problem. It's a problem that you can't always see just by looking at the votes. Sometimes you really have to dig into the bills, or you can come to one of these. I just wanted to say at the end, what could you do? What can you do? Well, I would suggest if you're not on Hope's list, she sends out the emails from Legislative Action Committee, and we're going to send the tallies out. If you're not on her list, get on her list, and you'll learn more about the bills that way and what's happening. We need to get the word out to other people that legislature, as they said this morning at the breakfast, Biteman said, we need reinforcements. And as Pendergraft said, don't vote blindly for an R. Find out what they're doing. And the Republican Party in Wyoming doesn't say you have to agree 100% with the platform. It says you have to agree 80%. If you want funding from the party for your campaign, you have to agree 80% with the platform. That's not unreasonable. So we have to compare. Are these people voting 20% with the Republican platform? Maybe they're confused about which party they should be in. The third thing I would say is we need to show our faces at some of these legislative meetings. And I know it's hard. Most of them are in Cheyenne. But if you can get down there even for a couple days, if you can do it, it makes a difference. All we have there practically are paid lobbyists. And some of them paid by you. We're paying for some of them. Like, I would get so frustrated when the University of Wyoming lobbyist would come over. And he was making in the neighborhood of $175,000 a year. And he would come over and he'd lobby against gun bills. And I think, I'm paying him to lobby against my interests.
Seven school teachers. They came and testified against all our gun bills. That really ticked me off, wondering if it was out of public money.
So we need to be down there like Mark was.
What if we can, I know everybody can't, some work, it's just impossible, but if you can, get done it. Or if they come in our neighborhood. Thank you so much.
These people, like Craigo's feet to the fire, you know, can't listen to their bells speak in fancy words and half the time you power them. No, I don't think you can look at math. I'm probably good math. What do you mean you're good with math? Like,
that's your job.
Exactly.
I need to get this wrapped up. I want to respect everybody's time. We've been here a couple hours. So thank you all for coming. Our regular meetings are on the second Wednesday of every month. And I believe 307, Net 307 Radio is going to interview Barry tomorrow. Is that correct, Kate? So maybe Kate can bring up some questions that you guys didn't get to ask to Barry tomorrow. So look for that on 307, Net 307 Radio sometime next week. Sometime maybe by the end of the week. His interview after this evening. So, Kate, we're going to hold your feet to the fire to ask him some of the hard questions maybe, huh?
You have questions? Let me have them and I'll ask them.
Yeah, so send her. If you'd like to write down some questions, she's taking them tonight. She will give them to tomorrow. So here's your opportunity.
For those of you that didn't get to go see Harriet Hagen last night, she's an amazing person. But the amazing thing, the whole event to me was there was not one public official who was elected that was there. Not a one. There wasn't a county commissioner. There wasn't a mayor. There wasn't a city councilman. There was none of the new fully elected GOP executive board was there. And you'd think that they would come to support our U.S. congresswoman.
They don't support her. That's the problem.
And to me, it was just a real eye-opener.
The people that we've elected in this county do not support her because she's a true Republican.
Most of the
conservative.
I can't say what I was about to say. So, because I'm representing the Republican Women's Group up here, so I can't express my personal opinion at this moment in time. So thank you all for being here. If you want to be on our email list, please, I will just send you notices of our meetings and our events. I will not inundate you with a bunch of stuff, although I could. I won't. So if you'd like to get our emails and notices, please make sure I have a legible email address for you back there. And we would love for anybody to join our group if you're interested. We're looking for members. So thank you very much for being here. And if you'd like it, we've got speakers lined up. Sometime in the future, Anthony Bouchard, which is one of our senators, will be here. He is very, very passionate about this, that Chloe's bill. It's his baby. And if you would like to hear about what's truly happening with that, when Anthony shows up being here, it's a very compelling argument that he makes, and it's disgusting. And I've got some other speakers lined up. We haven't got anybody.